Welcome to the Podcast Maneuver, the officially unofficial podcast for Star Trek Picard. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 1, Episode 7, titled Nepenthe. Do you know that's the name of the planet they went to this episode?
I think so.
Yeah,
I heard that. Is it related to rural Penthe, the Klingon prison world?
I seriously doubt it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just like another region of the planet. Yeah.
Yeah.
they go to a significantly nicer region of the planet this time. What do you think of this episode?
It was a mixed bag. I mean, I love seeing all the stuff with Riker and Picard, and Troy was gold.
Oh man, I love that stuff.
Like, I love that Riker is this pizza chef dad bod, kind of like almost like a retired Federation hippie, the way he's dressed.
But he couldn't be more Riker too, right?
Right, exactly.
He's like, still so Riker. Like when he says shields up, perimeter scans to max, I'm like,
yes.
Holy shit, he hasn't lost a step.
Yes, I was surprised they didn't pan to Michael Dorn up in the balcony, like keying in all the information. That stuff felt really good and really right. I felt like they did my man Hugh dirty.
He's a great character. I wanted him around longer.
Yeah, I thought he might be someone that sticks around for a while, but, fucking Lieutenant Rizzo. Do we even have her Romulan name? Is her name actually Rizzo?
Her true name?
It's like R apostrophe Z-O.
Maybe. It might
Rizzo.
Be.
Rizzo. She fucking kills Hugh. There is, like, So there are some shows I follow where you have to go to the showrunner's Instagram or Twitter to understand what's going on. Like American Horror Story, for example, does a lot of stupid shit to Ryan Murphy. Just like, oh, well, this seems like it's starting to be one of those shows, because there was several points where, if you go on r/Star Trek, they got all the answers. But those answers are not contained in the episode of television that we watched. They were contained in comic books, or they're contained in Instagram, or they're contained in a Reddit AMA.
Yeah.
And I find that kind of frustrating.
Yeah, I think I know the moments you're talking about, because the biggest one for me is this Fenris Ranger's beacon. We'll get there.
Yeah.
That was super confusing to me.
Indeed.
The weakest part of the show continues to be the Romulans. Mm-hmm. Like, they've got a really interesting hook here with this artifact. It's the character. I think it's the character of Rizzo. She's just a ridiculous villain at this point.
Yeah.
And there's like some just out of nowhere shit that happens to save her life. And she kills one of our favorite characters.
Yeah.
There's a lot to dislike about her.
Yeah, she's just all over the place. And she seems very... She's often portrayed as dumb, impetuous, and wrong constantly. Mm-hmm. Like, she fails to kill a Romulan melee specialist despite having tons and tons of people with guns around them. And I don't know. That's a problem. And also, Jurati continues to be kind of a mess of a character. And they have this intrigue where Chris, Captain Rios is trying to figure out who's got the tracker inside, because he knows it's not him. And I thought that was kind of weird.
Most of that's okay. I have some minor complaints about the way things are filmed, and like the set, and maybe some of the practicalities of making this thing. But like, I think I get what Jurati's big deal is here, and I understand it, and I feel for her. Maybe it's not as expertly done as I would like.
Yeah.
And I'm watching Westworld Season 2 right now, and there are some things... There are some things in there that are done poorly, but...
Same.
There are some things in there that are done better than any television I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
So the contrast here is pretty big.
I just finished Kitsuye last night.
Oh,
and it's so good.
We got a whole podcast on Westworld coming up here tomorrow, so...
Yeah. So let's not dwell too much on the Star Trek of it all. But I don't know. There's again, a lot of good stuff. And that scene around the dinner table where it's just essentially becomes a TNG episode with him going around...
The Ready Room.
Like Troy said, treat it like the Ready Room, and fucking he did.
I love it.
Is really good.
Right down to him saying thoughts.
Yes. Like, turning and...
That's what he always does. It's perfect.
Yeah, and Riker instantly chiming. Yeah, it's all really good stuff.
Here's the other thing I like about this episode. I think, so everybody's been feeling off about Picard as a character in this series, right? They've been saying, oh, this is not the Picard I know. And I've been saying it too. Like at the beginning, I was like, man, this is not Picard. at some point, I've come to terms with this is not going to be the Picard that I know. This is a broken version of Picard. Mm-hmm. This episode starts to turn him back into Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah.
From TNG. And, you know, it's going to take him a while to get there. Maybe he never does, but I can see the roots of the man.
Yeah, and here's the other thing is I did to shore up your point. I don't know if I talked about this in the podcast or this is something we just talked about because we talk about Picard outside the podcast. Probably shouldn't, but we do. And I mentioned that like I was just watching an interview, a recent interview with Patrick Stewart, or maybe it was a Khan performance where he's very animated and like his voice sounds strong. Mm. And I'm like, what is he actually doing? Like an old man Picard performance? Like right. he's trying to like make Picard 20 years older. And I kind of think he is because the ready room scene, I felt like a lot of that dropped. And the steady kind of in command firm Picard that we knew from the series reemerged. I almost wonder if it's a intentional choice by Patrick Stewart to kind of play up his age and infirmary to kind of turn this corner with Picard, the character.
Could be.
Or I don't know, maybe he just had an extra shot of Earl Grey.
Yeah.
Had a little bit more caffeine.
He had some real tea leaves, none of that replicated crap.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. He palmed some snake leaf off of Raffi, and he's just really feeling that Picard juices flowing.
All right.
Picard arrogance, as Riker said.
Yeah, Picard arrogance is his drug of choice. it's a designer drug made by Picard. All right, let's get into the recap, yeah?
Yeah, let's do it.
We start off at the Daystrom Institute 3 weeks ago when O approached Jurati, and she knows about both meetings with Picard that she had and this Maddox data dump, and O tells Jurati that she needs to go with Picard and mind melds with her to show her what will happen if synthetic life is allowed to exist, which is, I think, the destruction of Earth? It looks like Earth to me.
It's some kind of M-class planet, but yeah, I figured it's Earth because why? Romulan's already been shattered.
Yeah.
I like the idea that they, because I remember saying something like, I would love to know what O showed Jurati to make her completely flip to the point that she's willing to murder her lover.
Yeah.
And I thought the mind, I've completely forgot about, you know, the I didn't forget about Vulcan's mind melding. It just didn't occur to me that like, that's one way to really make someone turn on a dime. If you can just like, hey, here's the things I know that's going to happen, zap into your head. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how you can make a convert really fast. So I thought it was pretty clever to have this apocalyptic vision. I do wish that it was a little more tell or maybe more show. Like, I still don't feel like I know exactly what's going on. We see this shadowy like ring of maybe the Vulcans, maybe the Romulans.
Maybe synthetics. I don't know.
They're in a stone circle and there's 11 of them and they're getting blown away by a green explosion.
It's a traditional synthetic ritual.
Yeah. And it's got
none of them have shoes on.
It's got pictures of Commodore O tearing her face apart.
My biggest question coming out of this vision is this a vision of the future or is this manufactured somehow? How and if it's a vision of the future, how would she have that vision?
It's probably this Romulan religion thing, is what I'm guessing.
Yeah.
But that again still doesn't completely solve my point because that's the Scooby-Doo answer. I'm looking for the second stage because I don't usually accept purely religious answers out of Star Trek. I want them to, you know, show that it's actually a subspace psychic reflection out of a wormhole or some shit like that.
Right.
And we're not getting that. So yeah, I mean that's the thing. It's like I wish I knew more about what she was actually impressing upon Agnes that was going to happen. We got a little bit more detail because I get that Agnes knows, but as an audience member, I wish I did.
Hmm. Yeah, I think we'll get there in time. It's just they're drip feeding that.
Still not a fan of sunglasses in Star Trek.
No,
still
there's a lot of things I'm not a fan of in Star Trek.
Yeah,
cursing. Not a huge fan of cursing in Star Trek, even though I curse regularly.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Star Trek needs to be better than me.
Yeah.
In every way possible. And that's one of the ways it's not.
Yeah.
And it's glaring.
Well, that's the other thing is like, I think that this is something that the guys in Red Letter Media continue to harp on. But like, is that just Picard is broken? The Federation seems broken. Hmm. Like they're just... And you things can fucking turn on a dime, man. Like, look at Germany 1910. Look at Germany 1935. Like, huge changes in that society. And you look at something like all the synthetic life forms in the Federation turning on you instantly and causing a bunch of death and devastation. And that does seem like that the Federation as a whole is a little bit, you know, gone in this darker direction. I don't have a problem with it because, again, things can turn around that fast, especially when there's major galactic upheaval, there's power vacuums. It is, I do think it's also weird how they continue to insist that the neutral zone is both collapsed, but yet a serious thing that has treaty obligations. Like, there is a little muddled in the writing there, but what are you going to do? Oh, we also, speaking of O, Commodore O is definitely a Vulcan, because if she was a Romulan, she wouldn't be able to mind meld.
I don't think Romulans can mind meld. I'm not 100% certain.
I did a quick tour through Memory Alpha, and there's like some claims that there's like latent low-level psychic abilities among Romulans because they're closer to
like the
way
that Troy is telepathic.
Right, and if they have like fancy gear, they can do some kind of like empathy type, like if they have like a psionic booster or something. Mm-hmm. So, but it doesn't appear. It seems like she just mind melded with her. So
then,
that's
she's
pretty Vulcan. So the question is, why would a Vulcan help the Romulans infiltrate the Federation? How would a Romulan sit down with a Vulcan and impress upon them all the shit? Without a mind meld, how do you do that?
It must make a certain amount of logical sense. And we'll see if the show can deliver on that logical sense that the Vulcan had when they made these arrangements.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure after this episode, but we'll see. Trackers that can be chewed.
Children's chewable trackers.
What kind of tracker would be better chewed? This has to be some radioactive. Like, Jurati's dead, right? Jurati chewed this tracker. Her body is slowly dying from the inside out because of the radiation that they can track through.
She certainly looked like it
subspace.
In that sick bay, which we'll talk about. But so the only thing I can think of is like this is some kind of nanite replicator thing that you eat and it like builds a subspace antenna inside you once you chew it up. Because even as a radioactive isotrope, how do you fucking track that at warp speed in a subspace bubble? It's got to be something that, like, some kind of nanotechnology that assembles some kind of tracker inside you that's, you know, would be invasive and time-consuming to install through conventional memes.
That makes a certain amount of sense.
But I don't know. I have to read the Picard technical manual to find out.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, then Rafi and Rios are caught in a tractor beam from the artifact. And Jurati suggests just asking the people on the artifact to let him go. Just let us go home. Because she really wants to go home.
I mean, it actually made a certain amount of sense. Like, hey, we don't have Picard and the Borg girl. We're just on a job to deliver this guy for the Federation. We're all Federation citizens. Fuck off, you know?
It's also extremely naive because, they might know where Picard went. Like, they were wanted for questioning at this point. Like, there's a lot of reasons not to let them go.
For sure. But I didn't think it was a crazy suggestion for a civilian to make.
And she's just scared. I get it. She's not, you know, ex-Starfleet. She's not used to these situations.
Right.
She just wants to go home. So then Rizzo on the artifact starts killing XBs while demanding that Hugh tell them the location of Picard and Soji. He won't talk, so they kill all of the XBs in front of him. And then Narek gets on a ship to go somewhere. We don't really know where yet. Rizzo keeps trying to get Hugh to talk, but she tells him she can't because he's protected by the treaty, or she can't kill him, rather. So Narek has the signal lock on La Serena, and they let La Serena go. They're going to track them and follow them. And then Elnor is still on the artifact, but he wants them to leave without him, so they do. Just abandon him. I don't know why.
I think it's funny that it's like, you know, what about Elnor? And Rios and Rafi both look at each other like,
We
just met this guy an episode and a half ago, man. These ties don't run deep. Like, we're better friends with you than him, and you know how good of friends we are with you.
Yeah, and I guess XBs are a lost cause is basically what Elnor is saying. Like, Hugh's cause is more lost at this point than Picard's.
Yeah, but what's his plan? Is he going to murder every Romulan on this cube?
I don't know. I don't know that he has a plan.
Is he going to eat every chicken? And he's going to go the hound on these people? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know what he and his Romulan ninja sword can do to liberate the Borg. It's a noble sentiment, and it's by definition seemingly a lost cause, so pretty on brand.
Yeah. And this is the scene where it's like, really, Rizzo, this is your character?
Mm-hmm.
This is what they're doing with you? Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go to Nepenthe, which is the most beautiful planet in all of Northern California, and Picard meets a girl named Kestra, and on their way back to the city, or I guess to the cabin, as we find out, Kestra triggers Soji by calling her an android, and Picard has to explain, like, on the fly, who she is, your sister's dead,
yeah,
all this shit that just blows her mind. Soji thinks it's just more mind games, though.
You say it's a perfect planet, but it also has venomous bunny rabbits, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So that first rabbit, it's like the rabbit out of Monty Python Holy Grail. You got to watch that thing. It's vicious.
Yeah. And the rabbits also have healing properties, I guess.
Mm,
everything on the planet does.
Everything does. Yeah, why not? You get bit by it and you die, but then you get better. I like the callback to Picard's heart being solid duritanium.
Yeah.
You might want to aim at my head. And also,
and I was thinking in that moment, like, why would he tell this attacker to aim at his head?
Well, I had a showed up, I'm like, what kind of fucking stage cosplay horse shit is this? And then it's like they instantly revealed that it's a little girl. This is a costume. Like, okay, thank God, because that makes sense.
I thought we were in for like an indoor kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like this. Yeah. This not very advanced tribe of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cosplayers.
Yeah, Picard's going to hide out in this primitive planet of Lord of the Rings stage play actors. What'd you think of Kestra here?
I thought she was good.
Mm.
Yeah.
I felt like that she's a little too old to be playing this young. Because
I couldn't tell how young she was supposed
to be. How old do you think kids are before they stop dressing up and doing like shit like this and the... Like, I feel like...
In our society, 12.
Yeah, like, so when they stop doing that kind of shit.
Yeah.
And I don't know. She seemed like she was playing a little bit even younger than that, just her whole affect.
Mm.
But the thing is like, Star Trek The Next Generation has a long, proud history of asking 18-year-olds to play 11, you know?
Okay.
Like, yeah. So... And they also don't do many favors usually in TNG because they dress them up like just little men.
Mm-hmm.
They have like adult haircuts and they have adult like space tunics and shit.
Yeah.
I
think River Phoenix was probably like 20 when he's playing his character in TNG.
Yeah. Wait, River Phoenix was in TNG?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, no.
I think so. I think, no, I'm thinking of the wrong guy.
Never okay. Mind. I know who you're talking about. You're talking about the one guy who's from a warrior society and he kidnapped a human kid and raised him as his own, right? The blonde kid?
No, I was thinking of the kid whose father dies. And then Wesley has to come in and like yell at Picard about how he was angry telling about his father's death and maybe killing him. And like, and then they come to terms with it.
Well, Will Wheaton himself, 27 when he's filming The Next Generation.
Right. Famously.
But they didn't, I mean, Will, they never really nailed his, like, how to make a realistic smart teenager character either.
Yeah.
Like nowadays, I think you've got they've done this enough that you could get the right director, the right writers to do it. But I don't know. Is a little. I couldn't tell whether she's got some kind of learning or emotional disability, or maybe in my head canon that Riker and Troy is keeping her into some kind of perpetual pre-adolescence to make up for losing their first child. Or what the hell? They're just fully encouraging her to retreat in this fantasy world and stay young forever.
Yeah, it seems like that's their MO, right? Like the other kid, Thad.
Yeah.
He made up a bunch of languages and sort of living in fantasy worlds all the time.
Yeah, J.R.R. Sort of Thaddeus here, inventing all these fake elvish languages.
Came up with some elvish warrior nuns.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty inventive. Also, I wanted to note here that the name Kestra. As we're about to find out, this is Riker and Troy's kid.
Yes.
And Kestra is Deanna's sister's name. Mm-hmm. She also died pretty young, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of... I don't know. There's something bittersweet about the whole thing. Like naming the kid who survived Kestra
and
after
satisfying.
Your other kid died. And like, I guess it actually wouldn't have been after the fact. It would have been before. But Yeah, there's something I like about it.
It's kind of satisfying that they're aware of their own history. They can they can read the memory alphas as well as anybody. One thing that struck me as a kind of a false note is Soji starts saying that none of this is real. Go ahead and get on the mind game. And I got excited, like, this is interesting because I'm pretty sure Picard, Riker, and Troy have all been victims of some elaborate Romulan mind fuck.
Yeah.
And then we get to like the halfway point of the episode where Picard is like, oh, you think this is a Romulan mindfuck? Oh, you're so... And I'm like, what the... How many lights are there, Picard?
Yeah.
What? But Riker, remember when they tricked you into thinking you had a kid? Like, this is what Romulans do. She's excited. And they were doing it to her. Mm-hmm. Like, why wouldn't she think this is just an elaborate way to get, like, to crack the next level of resistance? I thought, I wish Picard hadn't been so dismissive of it.
There is a lot of history, and there's a much better way that they could have approached this.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I didn't think it was bad the way they did it. I mostly liked it. Picard being sort of, like, so far gone from who he used to be that he can't even empathize with this person.
Yeah.
He just wants to shut this whole thing down and tell her that he's basically saying, are you stupid?
Yeah.
There's no mind fuck going on. I'm Captain Jean-Luc Picard, you idiot.
Yeah.
That's not going to convince her.
I just magicked you off this Borg cube with technology no one knew existed until like 5 minutes ago, but it's all in the up and up, and you can trust these people because, look, they all vouch for me. Like, come on.
These people you don't know. Yeah, I mean, Dana has it completely right here. Like, that's a stupid way to approach this, and Picard would have known 14 years ago that was a stupid way.
Sure.
So, they arrive at the cabin where Riker and Troy are living, and we get an appropriate amount of reunion with both of them. And then they let Picard hole up there after he explains the danger. Explains the danger.
I love especially seeing Riker, and he's cooking, he's listening to jazz, because of course he's listening to jazz. Yeah. And, you know, him just completely being blown away by Picard. And the shields up shit we already talked about.
Oh, so good.
Because he's had some problems with the Kzinti. Are you aware of this species?
I recognize the name. I don't know what role they played.
So I didn't even know the full extent of this history with Star Trek. So Larry Niven, who is the writer of the Known Space series, he's got Ringworld, The Man Kzinti Wars, invented this feline species called the Kzinti. And they're like lion, tiger men. If you're familiar with the Kilrathi from like Wing Commander, it's the same thing. Apparently, Larry Niven was hired to adapt one of his short stories into a Star Trek animated series, and thus the Kzinti officially made their way into the Star Trek canon, and they've appeared from time to time. I think there was a Kzinti, like, exotic dancer in Star Trek V. You know, the hits, the animated series.
Who wants that?
Star Trek V, and now Riker. They're tiger people, and apparently... There's some no good Kzintis prowling the neighborhood. Had a lot of Kzinti problems.
They came here for the healing properties of the planet, apparently.
Right.
Are they bipeds? They got to be bipeds, right? Bipedal. Humanoid bipeds. With cat heads.
Cat heads. They got the weird cat feet, too.
Cat paws for feet.
Like paws and like their feet, like their knees bend backwards.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they have a lot of weird traditional rituals.
Bet they do.
I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast. I'm a little weirded out every time they curse in Star Trek. Mm-hmm. It's a little strange. Like Riker last told Picard, "Whoa, what'd you tell me? You want to be up to your ass in Romulans for the rest of your life?"
Right.
I don't think I've ever heard Riker curse.
Hell and damn. He said a lot of, you know, like hell you will and.
But I don't know why I draw a line beyond damn. Every time somebody says something past damn, I'm like, oh, they curse.
George Carlin. I think ass is not one in of the words seven. You're not allowed to say. So, yeah. The other thing is I love when Riker gives Picard a big hug. He gets flour all over him.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, because he's like, you know, ass deep in pizza making. And gets Picard all untidy.
Yeah. So then Kestra asks Soji a bunch of questions about being an android and then explains what her father, Data, was like as they bond. It's what this scene is all about. I agree with a lot of the things she's saying about Data. Like, what's the point of making an android with mucus and saliva?
Well, I mean, Data would absolutely do it. I think they're right. Yeah,
she absolutely would.
Yep.
Totally true. Although I do feel bad having never thought, having never given this more than 8 seconds of thought. Mm-hmm. I feel really bad for Tasha Yar having to kiss Data when he has no saliva. What is that like?
Oh, man.
Kissing a mouth with no saliva.
Like the tongue would feel like a leather couch, right?
Yeah, it's like kissing a tongue, kissing a cat. It's gotta be rough.
It's actually rough. Wow.
Oh, yeah. It'd be sandpaper in there. It's like duranium and shit.
It's duranium mesh alloy, yeah.
Yeah, it's like making out with the whole of the Enterprise. It can't feel good.
No, Some people must be into that, though. You imagine the erection, though. I mean, rock hard.
Oh, yeah.
Duranium hard.
And for as long as you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on. Picard and Troi reminisce over a child that she lost named Thad. Picard promises that he and Soji are going to be out of their hair as soon as he figures out their next move, and Troi is understandably worried about her daughter.
Yeah, so this is the other side of Riker. Like, stay as long as you want. We'll batten down the hatches and repulse any invader. And Troy's like, actually, you know, our daughter, worry about her. Mm-hmm. You haven't seen, apparently. So here's the other thing about Picard being a broken person. Riker and Troi, he's only visited 2 times, as far as I can tell, since the series is over. The movies are over.
Yeah, like 20-ish years.
And he forgot one of the times he stopped by. When Thad was just a baby.
Right.
It's so weird that he just Phantom of the Opera to everybody on his chateau in France.
Yeah. I mean, I think it adds a little color to the whole scenario. Like, you start to understand more about how broken of a man he must have been at that point.
Yeah.
Because we haven't really seen the aftermath of of the Federation, like, saying we're not going to use our starships to help you out anymore.
Yeah.
We saw like the immediate aftermath, but psychologically we haven't seen the fallout.
Right.
So moments like this, I think, shed a lot of light on the man Picard. I was going to say, I love, love, love this moment where Troi sort of steals herself before she walks into that room. It says so much. And that moment where she just closes her eyes, takes a breath, and then puts on, you know, a happy face, essentially.
Mm-hmm. She says they're fine, but she's clearly, like, you know, fighting back tears. It's I don't think you ever get over that, especially since I don't think it's been more than a couple of years in the past, it doesn't seem like.
Yeah. Not sure how long it's been.
When did the Sense attack?
14 years ago.
But they said Thad would have been 18. And I don't know.
These timelines are strange.
I was thinking that if Thad was going to be 18, that means Riker and Troi had like a toddler in the Nemesis timeline.
I don't remember them mentioning anything about it. I've only seen that movie once.
Yeah, same.
But I think that's how the timeline would work out, unless I'm mistaken.
And that's fine. You can have kids on Starfleet ships now. Like, and there's a plot point in this episode.
Yeah.
They said that our kids grew up on starships. That's why they invented this homeworld and all that. I enjoyed that. What I didn't enjoy, and fuck you for making me now not be able to notice this, but you're right. The music on this show, just the bass line. Oh, first of all, there's too much of it.
Yeah.
It's like wall to wall, and it just follows the emotion of the scene so close it comes off as cloying. And I don't know how to explain it. Just individual turns of expression on the actor's face makes the key go from minor to major. Mm-hmm. Or it reminds me a lot of Forgetting Sarah. Was it Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
Marshall, yep.
Jason Segel's character, he composed music for the shitty, like, syndicated crime series. Uh-huh. And how he was kind of like parodying, like, all he does is just like, it's the most generic. It's not even generic. It actually detracts from the scene.
I think so.
Because I kept on noticing it. Like,
it's like the show doesn't have the confidence, and maybe rightfully so, to just say, like, we're going to let this moment stand on its own.
Yeah.
We're going to let you get through the performances and the directing what you're supposed to get emotionally out of this scene. And it's like, punch it up. We need something here because it's just not working. Give us a music cue.
And I thought a lot of stuff here worked as far as just from an emotional, from an acting, from just affection for these characters standpoint.
Absolutely.
But I do think the dialogue wasn't helping them out in a lot of different... this scene's fine, but the one later on where Troy's talking about the positronic matrix and all that.
Mm, yeah.
I don't know. We'll get there.
We will. So we go back to La Serena, where Rios realizes they're being followed by someone, Narek, and they decide to shake him.
There's a Romulan snake ship, apparently. You got snake leaf, you got snake jumpers. Mm-hmm. The 24th century is obsessed with snakes, man.
They sure are.
Yeah, you got the snakes in the grass. I don't know. Smoking snake grass.
So Jurati expresses some second thoughts about being on this mission. She wants to go home, and Rafi's trying to figure out why. Rafi offers to get her some dank snake leaf or cake, whichever works for Jurati.
She's going to be making some snake leaf butter.
Okay, there are a couple things here.
Cooking it right in that cake.
That I cannot abide.
Okay.
First of all, Romulan fidget cubes. Man, this fidget spinners are such a fad that have already gone out of style.
Sure.
Like, you're showing your ass already as far as aging yourself. Mm-hmm. This is like putting Romulan pogs into the show. This will not be a thing 10 years from now. No kid will know 20 years from now what a fucking fidget spinner is.
Which might actually make it cooler. Like, if he just like has this thing he's fidgeting with all the time and you don't know what the thing is, it's more alien, right?
I guess.
Like, as opposed to like Romulans playing alien, you know, Romulan Mahjong and Romulan Rubik's Cubes. And
three-dimensional chess worked for me. I don't know what's wrong with that.
Exactly.
Have him playing a game of three-dimensional chess while he's piloting.
Yeah. Yeah, or something.
That would impress me.
Maybe have him hit that snake leaf pipe. Just make it to work. This is just endemic. It's a scourge.
Yeah.
It's like the opioid crisis in the 21st century. It's a snake leaf sweeping the galaxy.
Yeah.
So many Romulans in the snake leaf gutters.
The other thing about this scene, which blows my mind, is that Rios makes a big deal about Narek or the ship just being barely out of sensor range, like just on the edge of their sensors, can't quite get a lock on it. He's doing such an amazing job piloting at the boundaries of where they can detect him. And they show a shot where you can see he can't be more than a kilometer away.
Mm-hmm.
What good are sensors that can only sense a kilometer away?
Man, so rarely in Star Trek is it this noticeable, but like if you take a shot every time Worf says, a ship is approaching, it's 300,000 kilometers away. And then they show the external shot and they're like 5 football fields away from each other.
Okay.
And just the idea of like zipping around at like half impulse power, which I always understood is like half the speed of light. Like any sublight combat in Star Trek should just be like a blur. Like no one can see anything going on. But instead, these ships are doing these stately banks and slaloming and taking these slow pot shots at each other. But yeah, it's really...
It's very obvious when they show a shot from underneath their ship and behind it. You can
and they're
see...
making a point that like he's just outside my sensor range.
It's stupid.
If he had a space rear view mirror, he'd see the guy.
Right. You could look out at the back window and see him.
Here's the question I've got. Why doesn't Narek's ship cloak? Because then they could do a whole bunch of stuff like, you know, Rios's, because I believe that Rios's ship has got like military grade stuff that he's probably souped up, you know, because he's a Starfleet former command officer.
They say how badass the snake leaf ship is, right?
That's true. And why wouldn't it be equipped with the cloaking device? And he could be getting tachyon disturbances that he's like, you know, the last few times I've made a minor course correction, I've seen this off the thing. But no, they just have him.
That would feel too much like an old Star Trek episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they use their brains to solve problems instead of their brawn.
Yeah.
No, I have got the actual solution here. It's because the cloaking controls are on the left-hand side and he's just fidget spinning.
Oh,
he can't. He can't put that damn thing down.
Right, right.
And he can't reach it with his other hand.
He's got crippling Romulan OCD.
Right.
It's really interfering with the performance of his job duties. He needs to get some help. He needs to check himself into the disturbed wing of the Borg cube.
So then we go back to Picard trying to keep Riker from knowing too much about the danger they're in as Riker makes pizza. Riker introduces himself to Soji, then her and Kestra head into the woods. After Soji learned this Vivian language in 2 minutes, which causes Riker to deduce that the Tal Shiar are after her because she's Data's daughter. And then he warns Picard he can't control the danger in the situation quite the way he used to.
Sweet wood-fired pizza oven cam.
Mm-hmm.
They really, really like going to that.
Doing like a Breaking Bad here, right?
Yeah, as much as they can.
Yeah.
What did you think about Soji's Data trademark Data head tilt? Like, there's been none of this before.
You're right. You're 100% right. I don't know how to explain she would suddenly have this tick.
Is she going to stop using contractions now too?
Yeah.
Like, I suddenly cannot use contractions, Captain. What's happening?
Yeah, it's a little on the nose.
I mean, honestly, she just dropped the fact that she read a whole fucking book in 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't need to do the head tilt. I don't understand.
Well, the head tilt was like, I guess Riker must be familiar with synthetics in general to know that there would be a distinction between the way that Data tilts his head and the way that a regular synthetic tilts his head.
I don't know, because what does that even mean? That's all just, were all just personal quirks that Soon gave to Data.
Right.
It's not
I think
like,
that's the thing that tips him off.
It's not like if you have a positronic brain, your head has to tilt to the left at 45
degree
angle.
No, but that's the thing that tips him off, that it's specifically Data's daughter. Or has Data DNA, which whatever the fuck that means.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's yeah. It's the I'm just saying the metaphor is a little bit muddy.
I doubt Riker knows about the fractal neuronic cloning and shit. Like, come on.
He might be, because that. I mean, that's the thing. Is like, I guess I would believe if he was really up on Android because you know Dad died, and that's kind of there's a maybe he's like
okay.
He's like Nick Nolte in Lorenzo's Oil. He just knows he's like got a fucking medical degree in this very niche piece of science.
Speaking of niche, what the fuck?
You guys seen Lorenzo's Oil?
Lorenzo's no.
Yeah, it's like Nick Nolte's got a kid that's got this very rare degenerative brain, and it's a real life story about these parents who did all this research about different therapies, and there's a particular type of oil that helped resheath myelin and dog studies, and they were one that anyway it's they
and
they,
Lorenzo's got it.
Yeah, Lorenzo, it's Lorenzo's Oil, and I can't remember if that actually was a big deal and it helped people or it was snake leaf oil.
Yeah,
and didn't, but it's a very moving motion picture. Nick Nolte's best film.
I do love this scene, just the Riker and Picard interplay. I mean, this entire episode, it's fantastic, and Picard and Troy, like, there's so much to love about these reunions. Riker, I just appreciate how much none of them have lost a single step, you mm-hmm. know? Like, okay, Picard's quite a bit older. Picard's not the same man he was, but when he's around his old crew, he sort of starts to step back into that role a little bit.
Yeah.
With their prodding. And I think that's the thing that always made Star Trek so good to me, is how everybody worked so well together.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of fed off of each other. Yeah. Real collaborative. It's all over these scenes. So then Troy gives Soji her first non-replicated tomato, which makes her question the validity of her own existence. And they talk about languages that Thad made up.
They had a fight over 5 minutes about whether it's tomato or tomato.
Right. That's deleted scene. and they talk about the languages Thad made up and then the disease that he had. And it turns out it could have been cured by a synth, but they were banned. And then Soji explains that she can't trust anyone because of what Narek did to her, and gets pissed when Picard makes a point about living with suspicion. And then Troy totally lays into Picard for fucking up that interaction. Tells him, just be the old Jean-Luc Picard that everybody likes, not this ridiculous French accent-having shitbag
yeah.
that nobody likes.
Yeah, stop this sinister stuff.
Right.
I don't know. There's some good techno babble too. The techno babble. All they needed to do to cure Thaddeus was to culture his infected brain cells in an active positronic matrix. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's all. What?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I'm sure it makes some sense to somebody somewhere.
I just, in an active positronic matrix, I don't know. It seems like one of those things where, like, okay, well, you don't want synths, but you can't use their, like, brain cultures to therapeutically heal people. That seems kind of crazy. Like, tightly regulate the positronic matrix technology. Don't let it, but if all you need, you know.
Yeah, maybe put it in a head, not a body. Like, where it can't do any harm?
Or not even put it in the head. Just have it be a disembodied, because it doesn't, like, act. What is that? Because, like, if it's an active positronic matrix, does that mean, like, they would actually inject this into a quote-unquote living synthetic being?
It seems like they would have to, yeah.
Would the synths have to volunteer for that? But synths are just slave labor.
According to what I know about synthetic life forms in Star Trek, yes, they would, because they were given full being rights.
Right, except the ones on Mars that you just keep in closets.
Exactly.
Until you need them.
Yeah, yeah. A little confusion in what rights those beings have.
Federation's a dark place now.
I gotta say, I do agree with Picard in this scene. He fucks up that interaction, but you can't live under that kind of suspicion your whole life. It'll destroy you.
You can't when you're being actively fucked with Romulans. I would love to come into him right after his there are four lights moment and be like, "Now, Picard, look.
Yeah.
Look. You're being very irrational about it. Just because this one mean Romulan tricked you doesn't mean everywhere you go."
But his point is valid. Like, you can't live your life like that.
Yeah, you're right.
He says it at the wrong time. It's way too soon
to be
going to
that. This is not her life.
This
is the last 30 minutes of her existence. So.
Right, right. So, yeah, like, maybe have a little compassion here. And I'm wondering, can Troy get anything off of Soji? Can she read anything
into
Soji?
She says, like, others in her body. Yeah, she says, you know, she has completely normal emotional responses as far as her body language and her tone of voice and all that, but I can't get anything from her emotionally.
So she's just using her counselor training,
which
I like.
I thought that was also cool, that she's not just an empath. She actually has had training and done a lot of research about being a counselor, and it shows through.
And with all that... stuff going on where Soji bites into the tomato. She's like, "Oh my God, this is better than real, is so much better than synthetic." And then at the end of that, they have a burnt tomato come out of that oven, and Riker holds it up and says, "No worries, guys, just a burnt tomato." Mm-hmm. I think they're getting at something thematically here with this tomato and real versus synthetic life, but I have no fucking idea what
bread
it is.
Bread can't never be toast again. Or wait, toast can't never be bread again.
Okay, yeah.
No, you're right. Like, it's... They're doing something there with the concept of self-hatred, I think, and then understanding that, like, well, you know, the real tomatoes have bad things happen to them, too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, replicated tomato. But that's the other thing, is, like, I thought that... The replicator can't get XYZ correct was like for very exotic things, like, you know, Picard could taste the difference in a $300 an ounce beluga caviar, or like maybe they can't quite get Romulan ale correctly, but like a tomato, you can't fucking replicate a tomato. It's weird that they went to like there's this obvious difference between, you know.
I mean, it's definitely a thing, like having watched all of TNG in the last month. I definitely remember a few times where, like, you know, Chief O'Brien or whatever would say, like, "Oh, this is bullshit." You know, it's not, doesn't taste like the haggis I remember, or whatever the fuck he was eating. This is not a real potato or something.
Well, that's the thing, like, I would buy that, like, if you have replicated haggis, it might not taste like your grandmother made on Earth, right?
Different
like recipe. It's different recipes, different types of, like, you know, you got haggis.
It's not haggis. I know he's not Scottish, right. But, you know.
Whatever the Irish version of haggis is. but a tomato, like a pretty foundational thing.
I mean, I have bigger problems with the replicator in this episode that we'll get to. We're not quite there yet.
Okay.
Then we go back to Hugh and Elnor heading back to the Queen Cell to take the cube away from the Romulans.
This Queen Cell's got some fucking power to it.
Apparently, yeah.
Can take back the whole Borg cube.
Maybe it's just going to, like, teleport everyone off of the Borg cube into space. I don't know. They're going to transport them 40,000 light years away.
Oh, maybe it's going to, like, blow the thing up and eject that little ball. That, like, that ball's got the queen cell in it, and he'll just, like, you know, Hugh is going to power out of there, blow up all the bad Romulans and save all
and
the
all
XP.
The other XPs at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's iffy. So they're headed off by Rizzo, who says it's a treaty violation to try and take the cube from us, and she's authorized to kill Hugh now. And Elnor tries to protect him, but gets lured into a trick. Guys, he doesn't know about lies. He doesn't know about the lies.
Babe in the woods.
And Hugh gets killed. And then
it's
Rizzo's
too bad
beamed out.
He's going up against a species that has fake front doors because they lie from birth.
He just stood there knocking for hours. Why won't
That's
this
actually
door
a
open?
Romulan rite of passage when you first realize that the parents have been raising you are not your real parents.
Gotcha.
Like every Romulan switches their kids at birth. And then, like, as soon as you're like, "You're not my real dad," they're like, "Haha, you've become a Romulan man or woman." And then your real parents come in from the closet and they resume. But yeah, it's really baked in, early age stuff. he's helpless about with this.
Not a huge fan of the filming of this action scene.
Oh,
I get that they're trying to make it disorienting because Elnor's flipping around and They want you to feel like the Romulans aiming at nothing, aiming at ghosts after they've already
it's
gone.
Batman
like,
Begins, and this
it's
is
really hard to follow.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's the damn shame is that this show, I think, had top-notch stunt work in the first three episodes. Even that when they stopped by to get Elnor, was that the fourth episode? Mm-hmm. I thought that those moves he pulled on those guys were pretty nifty. This stuff feels like it was shot by a person who doesn't know how to shoot action, and they're cutting around to it probably makes him seem a little bit like Batman, but it's very hard to follow. And then
and the lighting doesn't help.
At the end, it's clumsy where she goes and has to drop on Elnor, but decides to kill Hugh because that's more emotionally devastating to him. And then Elnor was going to kill her, but she gets beamed away. But it's not by her because she was taking aim at Elnor.
Yeah,
she gets beamed out in the middle of
it's bullshit. I hated that moment.
Yeah,
that moment just felt like, we're not done with Rizzo, but we need this scene to resolve. So I don't know. Fuck it. She transports out.
Beamed her out? Like, was someone monitoring the fight and beamed her out at the last? Like, okay, she's gonna get killed. Let's get her out of there.
No, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
maybe they'll try and explain it next week, but I don't know. I was really bummed out by that moment.
I was really hoping she'd take that knife between her eyes.
Yes, I was too. That would make that character so much better.
Yeah.
So they really made me think that Rizzo turned into a piece of cake, though, because they cut from this scene where she has just been transported out right into the replicator where they're making cake.
Star Trek has a proud history of anthropomorphic cakes. So do you remember the Troy cake?
I absolutely do. Yeah, in Data's dream.
It can happen. It can absolutely happen.
It sure can. So I wasn't sure. I honestly wasn't sure coming into this next scene, but it's the one where Rafi comforts Jurati with cake and chocolate milk, but Jurati breaks down crying. Rafi realizes it's because of Maddox. She's half right here.
Yeah.
And then Rios interrupts to say that they're still being followed, and there is a vomit scene that overstays its welcome, as all vomit scenes do.
Too much vomit in this episode, man.
Yeah.
I don't like the trend of showing people actively vomiting in television.
Yeah, it's gross.
Yeah. Yeah.
I imagine a lot of people who are squeamish about gore say the very same things about the trend toward more and more gory television.
Right. Right. Or there's some people that like lose their shit when they see a male penis on screen. I'm like, I'd give me 10, 20 dicks rather than someone throwing up, man. I hate watching people throw up. It's so gross.
It is. And like I said, I've been watching Westworld, and I even got a little squeamish in the gory parts of that. Like, when they're scalping people and taking out their brain.
Yeah. Some grim shit.
Yeah. And trust me, there are plenty of penises in that. No problem. It's
wall to wall.
That gore sometimes.
I think that Rafi has a point here. Where the fuck is the hospitality emergency hologram?
Dude, like, this EMH is the most useless thing on the entire ship. Throw it out the airlock, because every time the EMH senses an emergency medical procedure, a medical emergency, it shows up and it stares at you.
Yeah. Has no idea what to do.
No fucking clue.
It just
Robert Picardo jumps in there and starts hitting you with hypo sprays, immediately.
Hell
he knows what's up, but
like he would transport her blood out, clean it, beam it back into her body.
Beverly Crusher, as a human being, is faster at responding to emergency medical situations than this hologram.
She would come through the door, take a look at what's happening, whip out her tricorder, get her hypo spray
out the
other hand.
Even if she's seven decks away when it happens, she's there faster than the EMH. She's doing something faster than the EMH.
I don't get it. I don't get it. Especially since this EMH shows up to help Picard move into his fucking chateau, but someone starts hurling all over the place and
foaming at the mouth and convulsing.
It's a bad deal.
Ridiculous.
The emergency medical hologram's only function is to declare an emergency. That's all you can do. This is hey it's emergency. He's essentially calls 911,
and then he doesn't contact the captain of the ship for a good 2.5 minutes at least.
Because apparently I guess he worked on her. He got her stabilized in a coma.
And put her in the bed. I think she just stabilized on her own.
Yeah.
This EMH does nothing, man.
She fucked up the dosage of tritanium halcyide or whatever she took.
Oh, I was hoping she would de-evolve, like start turning into another species or something.
Turn
just
into like a little skittish monkey creature.
Yeah. Let's make this into a real TNG thing.
Hell yeah.
But none of that happens. We'll get there. So Riker serves dinner as Picard worries that Rios hasn't contacted them yet. And they talk about alternative ways to get off the planet, including this guy named Captain Crandall's ship, the Inside Strait. And Soji offers up the Romulan ritual to get to their next destination from her mind. But she's reluctant to trust Picard. He says...
He's like, listen to my shit.
Yeah, right.
My shit is truthful. You can tell with your android senses.
I mean, this is what Picard does. There's another episode where he does his TNG. Uh-huh. He's looking into my eyes, my heart, my voice, mm-hmm. see the truth, and explains why he wants to help her, because she gave him his life back via this mission. And Soji offers up what she discovered about the location of her home and tells Picard she wants to go there. And Kestra is able to find the location of the planet with the help of Captain Crandall via text.
That's kind of, I don't know.
I don't know who Captain Crandall is. He apparently knows a lot about...
Well-traveled, well-connected.
Yeah, astronomy.
That's the fourth moon of the Gulan system. Mm-hmm. I know it like the back of my hand. I also like this... Picard's got this like stirring... you know, before you showed up, I was kind of bored and ready to die, but now I'm alive. I have a mission, which means there's not a hell of a chance that you or anyone else can stop me. And I'm like... Weren't you just stopped saving billions of Romulans by a synth rebellion? Yeah. Didn't you like throw a hissy fit, quit Starfleet, and then go back to your grape farm and, you know, suck your pacifier for the last decade and a half? Like,
yeah.
Well, I hope no evil synths show up in this plot line to throw a monkey wrench in your unstoppable Picard plan. Come on.
Yeah, good point.
But hey, that was old broken Picard. This is Patrick Stewart shedding about a decade of rust. He's mm-hmm. he's in it. He's in the game. He's engaged.
So Captain Crandall, they're gonna go on his ship, right? I mean, they mentioned the ship twice. They mentioned his name like 52 times. There's almost no way that Captain Crandall doesn't come back into this story.
A lot of people are speculating about that, but.
Well, if you want a lost cause,
why wouldn't Picard just wait for the Serena to pick him up?
I don't know. Maybe they're something will drive warp. Him for the planet.
They're making best possible speed towards there.
It's true.
Is the rest of the season just going to be like Rio showing up like a couple days too late? Oh, you just missed him. Took off with Captain Crandall.
Right.
As he beamed up, Picard said, "This Crandall guy is a lot cooler than the other shithead I used to, you know, I've been palling around with. I like this crew even better." And, you mm-hmm. know, just going to always show up.
It might be.
Always up just late.
I like the name of his ship, though, Inside Strait, which is a lost cause if I've ever heard one.
Mm.
For people who don't play poker, that's a pretty long odds hand.
It's like a one in a million, literally.
Yeah, I don't know the actual odds. It's certainly not the longest of odds, but it is fairly long. And most importantly, it's about, well, it's half the chance of hitting an outside straight, which is, you know, a straight you can make on either end. Inside straight is you need one card right in the middle of, like, say you have 8-9 jack queen, you need the 10. That's the inside straight.
Gotcha.
So not great on the odds there. Says a lot about the mission. And then we go to Rios taking Jurati to sick bay, where he says he thinks Rafi's being tracked. Jurati says it's not Rafi, and Rios, I think, maybe half realizes it could be her. He has a moment where he looks at her with something on his face, but then he goes and does this thing with Rafi, so, and I'm not sure.
I think that, like, I wonder how... When are they stopped writing the show? Because this felt like two scenes that weren't connected, because I agree. The way that Rios was performed here is a person having an aha moment about, mm-hmm. oh my God, it's Jurati. But then the next... scene, he goes and confronts Rafi as if he didn't have this conversation with Jurati.
Maybe he's playing both sides here.
But why?
Maybe he thinks that either of them could be a spy.
That makes sense.
And so he's trying to play Jurati against Rafi and vice versa.
It'd be interesting, but I don't know. It seems like that he would play the same game with Rafi, where he would, because like the way he acted with her was bizarre. Like, you know, what are you going to do? Throw me out of an airlock? He's like, I don't know.
I hope not. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of weird, but.
Yeah. But Narek kind of shows up and sort of spoils all of the real shit we could be getting into here.
I want to say that the other thing is, I'm not sure if it's the lighting or it's the makeup, but this scene with Rojas or wait, not Rojas. Rios and Girardi in the sick bay is a crime against either makeup artistry or lighting, because I don't think you should literally be able to see every human defect on a person's skin and the makeup that they're wearing and the transitions between their makeup zone and non-makeup zone. Hmm. It's like, did they use a black light to light this thing? What the fuck? It's terrible. And at first I thought it maybe is my TV, because I got a new one and maybe I haven't got everything set right. But I watched it here again at work, and it's still like, you can see on both of their faces where the makeup starts, where it begins, and it's not great. It's not great.
Didn't even notice it.
Lens flares everywhere. Maybe they're lit exclusively by reflected lens flare.
Yeah.
And you just don't do that. It's an experimental technique that you just shouldn't do.
I didn't notice that, but I did notice some oddities of the replicator they're using on this ship.
Yeah, MakerBot.
So it is 100% a 3D printer, so much so that they left the fucking print head in
it. Yes.
Why would a replicator have a print head?
I don't know. Like, why isn't it just a replicator? Like, why would you make an existing, like, I think maybe it's a prop guy having fun with the idea that these are, like, the first generation replicators. We've got this technology kind of right now.
Yeah, but it doesn't, visually, it makes zero sense. Like, I take one look at that thing, I'm like, this is not a replicator. It's a 3D printer, and it's got a print head, and it doesn't need filament, like... What are you doing?
And it's weird because, like,
it just strikes me as like cheap, not like an Easter egg.
It goes backwards in technology. Like, they even have like these little lines come in to like build the matter like brick by brick. So it's kind of like little maker bot there. Mm-hmm. But you're right. It's going, that's technology going backwards.
Yeah, it was weird to me. So they give Narek, well, that's when Girardi, you know, replicates a neurotoxin and injects herself with it. And they lose Narek, and then the EMH tells Rios that Girardi is in a coma, and he runs to see what's up. We talked about what a joke this guy is, this EMH, so I can probably keep moving.
Did you notice Narek's joystick that he was... this thing looks... I'm pretty sure it's just like a Thrustmaster joystick, like right off the shelf. Yeah. Just check it out.
Are they having to cut corners in the budget here? Do they not have, like...
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Is it the transparent screens cost that much that they can't afford to get a decent lens replicator?
Flares. Every one of those is $5,000. Every time you see a lens flare, it's $5,000.
I don't know. That's weird. So Elnor hides as the artifact security team closes in, and he finds a Fenris SOS beacon and activates it. Fenris Rangers. Where did this thing come from? Because for the life of me, I've watched this episode multiple times. I've gone back to the previous episode to see if I could find, Picard dropped his, or...
Or I'm like, did I miss a scene? Because it would make perfect sense if Picard, before he goes off to safety himself, would be like, Elnor, use this to call that badass Borg woman that we just, you know, became acquainted with. And you can get... Because it kind of feels callous for Picard to completely abandon him. I'm like, maybe I missed something. But I did some research, and apparently this was addressed by the showrunner in an Instagram post where the neutral zone is a lawless place where the Fenris Rangers protect it, and Hugh is an ex-Borg, and he's friends with Seven of Nine, so she gave him a Fenris Ranger token in case he would ever need their help. And apparently this is Hugh's office that Elnor is rolling around in. And it just happened to be hanging there on the desk drawer. Like,
there was a scene in the episode that told us all of this, right?
None of this was in the episode.
No, sure. That can't be true. Surely there was a scene in the episode that said everything we needed to know about how this thing would get there.
No, it's complete horseshit that because they could have. They could have done this. Like, again, it would have been smart to have Picard.
Mm-hmm.
But I just like...
Just drop his when he's running from the Romulans in the previous episode, and Elnor spots it as he walks by. Like,
I suspect that they didn't have all the scripts written for this season, and they started shooting, and then there's a couple points where they get pinched, and they're just like, ah, fuck it, you know?
You gotta do something. This and Rizzo being transported out, just out of nowhere, are two huge, colossal fuck-ups, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, next episode, they might explain it, which... I guess, but it's like, that's something that, like, Ryan Murphy, speaking of American Horror Story, does all the fucking time, where he just does something and then explains it the next episode. But, like, that's I mean,
that strikes me as like cliffhanger television. Like when they leave you, bad cliffhanger television, when they leave you on a note of like, oh, what just happened?
Right.
What happened in that scene?
Right.
Not as opposed to like telling you what happened and then letting you go, how does this change the equation?
Right.
It's just, it's sloppy. It's real sloppy to leave me for a whole week going, man, that fucking was terrible. That sucked. That's a huge mistake by the crew
cast. You remember Heath's fucking security card on The Walking Dead?
You remember Heath on The Walking Dead?
Yeah, I don't think that ever paid off, right? So, I think that they were probably writing an episode or two ahead, and sometimes they forgot, we just stranded Elnor here on this cube, and also we killed Hugh for some reason. So, because I just thought, it's like, he needs an X-Borg to make this thing work. Him and Hugh will take over this thing, do some swashbuckling, daring do. No, it's pretty clear that 709 is going to show up, and she's going to be the XB that unlocks the cube, the queen cell in the cube. But they really should, like, and the thing that I find galling is fans on like message boards replying with people like having these issues. It's like, where the fuck did this Fenris SOS thing come from? And like, well, if you had followed the showrunner on Instagram, you would. I'm like,
right.
No.
If you would have made Star Trek your full-time job for the last 20 years, you would know all of this.
World building, fine. Crucial plot details you cannot bury in memory alpha and technical manuals. No. And that's just piss poor showrunning.
Yeah.
So
100%.
That's my response to that.
And luckily, we are finally at what I consider the best scene of the entire episode. We are talking all this shit about this episode, but there are some really genuinely great moments, and this moment with Riker and Picard is one of them.
Oh, sitting on,
So
on Walden Pond.
Picard's worried that La Serena hasn't sent word yet that they're on their way. Picard has gotten word now that they're on their way, and Riker asks about his new crew, which Picard says they're decidedly motley. And they talk about their retirements as they drink tea and stare at the countryside. And it's a really, really nice moment between, one guy who it seems like Riker has gotten everything he wanted aside from a dead son. He's gotten everything he wanted out of life, whereas Picard has spent the last 15 years stewing and letting himself deteriorate and just not being that Picard that he would have wanted to be 15 years ago. And I think the fact that Riker can point that out, but also point out the strength that Picard has within himself, if he just sort of gets back to who he was and who he wants to be, there's something so poignant about the whole thing.
Do you think that Riker being on active reserve duty is a tease for the future?
It's got to be.
Yeah.
It's got to be.
Like, I don't know whether he's going to get the Enterprise back out of mothball and come saving the day at the end of the season. Or...
I don't know about that, but he...
Well, people pointed out that that's literally the plot from All Good Things. You know, like Riker coming in with this on a souped-up Enterprise and saving the day. So it would kind of be cool.
It could be cool. It
could also be very Deus Ex Machina on the hands of these idiots. But
absolutely. I talked about Captain Crandall's ship, though. There's another opportunity here for him to use that ship to maybe... You know, Picard leaves on Rio's ship and they go do their thing, but then Frakes goes after him.
Do you think we'll actually meet Crandall? Because they've established him as kind of a character.
Yes, I do think at some point we will. Whether it's now and Picard meets him or later and Riker comes in with him, yeah, I think we will.
I wonder what he'd be like, though. Like, who gives a, like, you give a kid a broken compass, you have encyclopedic knowledge of the moons of this known Federation space and even the wild parts of it, like,
yeah, it's Barclay.
Oh my god. He changed his name to Crandall after because no one would take him on a ship. They just looked up his file like, oh, you're that holodeck pervert. Fuck that, Barclay.
Yep.
And then when he's Lieutenant Crandall, Lieutenant Crandall's got career prospects.
Hell
Lieutenant
yeah.
Crandall doesn't perv on senior staff officers on the bridge. Nah.
That was his other holodeck program, The Adventures of Captain Crandall.
Yes,
and
yeah.
And now he just took on that persona.
He
can finally be the confident man he always wanted to be.
Riker was his first officer, but he served him in the skirts with the go-go boots.
Okay. So let me throw this out there. You say that there's never any 20th century pop culture references in Star Trek. Did we get one with Motley Crue?
Oh, I don't
Slightly more modern than... Shakespeare and...
I think it's like, but it's actually literally referring to Motley Crue. Okay, all right.
Did
you catch the Star Wars reference?
No.
Jurati saying, I want to be one of those fun characters that suggest we go hide in the comet that's actually got this Gazorpazorp worm in it. Yeah. And like, that's pretty thinly veiled Star Wars reference.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the first one in Star Trek history?
I wouldn't swear to it. There's a lot of Star Trek I haven't seen.
That's true. That's true. As people continually implore us to give Voyager a chance.
There's a lot of Star Trek I will continue to not see.
But yeah, this is a great scene and can't wait to see Captain Crandall, a.k.a. Yep. Reginald Barclay.
Mm-hmm. And then Kestra sympathizes with Soji over their lost siblings and gives Soji a broken compass, and then Picard and Soji beam out. How does the compass not work?
Huh?
How does the compass not work when the dial spins? I know compasses can be demagnetized.
The only thing I can think of is this planet doesn't have a functional magnetic field, so it just kind of twists and turns. But I don't know how you break a compass like that either.
I tried to do some reading. You can demagnetize it if you expose it to a particularly strong magnetic field.
Well, there you go.
But
that's just Tuesday on Star Trek.
Yeah, that's true.
Like on Wednesday, it gets hit by a subspace distortion.
Mm-hmm.
On Friday, it's a temporal disturbance.
Right.
And then I think on Saturday, it phases in and out of real space.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this dialogue at this scene was pretty clunky, you know, with Kestra being like, you know, you have Captain Picard, he could be your dad, mm-hmm. and he could have you, and you could have him, and you could have each other. Like, okay, sure. Yeah, we're really crossing the T's, dotting the I's with this plan, aren't we?
Yep, I agree with you.
Plus, Kestra says she's going to miss her, but it's mostly because she's the only other girl on the planet besides her mom. Mm-hmm. So that probably sucks.
And I like the moment at the end with Riker and Troi just sort of staring at where Picard and Soji were.
Well, they had the wild three-way hug and kiss festival that they led up to that, too. I thought that was interesting. But you think that broken compass is actually going to... I wonder if it's going to have, because like, as Captain Crandall gives it to a kid, is it going to have like some kind of special feature, like it's an emergency shield or some shit like that?
It points to Snake Leaf.
Ah,
yeah, it's a Snake Leaf finder. Snake Leaf,
yeah. Right. Uh-huh. Snake Leaf dispensary, sure.
That's it. That's the end of the episode.
That's the end of the episode. Well, that must mean it's time for feedback. We've received several subspace communiques sent in to Picard@baldmove.com. First up here is Frank. A few weeks ago, I watched a YouTube discussion of the meaning behind Twin Peaks' return, considering the possibility that the entire new season of Twin Peaks is David Lynch's critique of nostalgia. In this discussion, there's an exploration of what fans expect from the return to a beloved thing from the past, expectations being that we will get more of what made us feel so good so many years ago. But as shown by the new Star Wars movies or the J.J. Abrams Star Trek nonsense, or in the X-Files return, oh yeah... check out Black Oil and Bee Stings if you want to hear our take on that. Mm-hmm. We can't get back that feeling we had before. It either feels like a dim copy or a close approximation that gives us small pleasure but not what we wanted. A specific point being that in Twin Peaks, Agent Dale Cooper really didn't act like Agent Cooper until the second to last episode. By subverting our expectations for so long, then finally giving us what we expected, after we long gave up getting that thing, we ended up enjoying it more. This show earns its fan service. I feel that episode 7 is an excellent example of this in practice. Why wasn't Riker and Troi in the revival all along? Because the show had to earn their place and making their meaning that much more meaningful to the fans. And this, Picard, has been a success, at least in this episode. I think, too, in light of the critique of nostalgia, is why I enjoy the new Trek's Deep Discovery and Picard. I shouldn't expect more of the old Trek or a service of my nostalgia. I should see Trek as a backdrop for new levels of storytelling, at least new to Trek. I'm glad we're past the episodic nature of Trek. There are valid criticisms of Discovery and Picard, but it not being episodic and doing away with dumb filler episodes and B-plots is fine with me. I agree to some extent. Because I do think that serialized television is superior to episodic, but I think Star Trek loses something by not being episodic. So where you can just explore a whole bunch of different ideas and, you know, have it all like the continuity is all in the characters.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of appreciate that's actually Something that Dan Harmon used to talk about in Harmontown a lot, that like episodic entertainment is its own challenge.
Yeah.
To have characters still believably progress and grow, but in a way that you can drop into any random episode and not feel lost. Mm-hmm. Like that's something that kind of like a lost aspect of television making.
Yeah, but it feels like it. And I would argue that Star Trek has been subverting expectations for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
With the change in tone of the movies and, yeah, like you said, Disco, like, and fuck, even the TNG, the end of TNG movies was not super Star Trek-y, in my mind. So like, yes, I don't know that we needed to continue to subvert expectations in this show, mm-hmm, after we've been doing it for so long.
Yeah. And the other real danger you get with serialized television is like, yes, you might not have dumb B or C plot, but what if the main plot is dumb for an episode or two? Mm-hmm. That it gets tough because, you know, in some of the worst Star Trek episodes, the B plots were what saves it or what makes it, you know, really, really fun. Mm-hmm. Whereas here, if like you're just not buying into, you know, a Lieutenant Rizzo, for example, you're stuck with her all fucking season long. She's going to be showing up and, you know, twirling her non-existent Romulan mustache, and mm-hmm, it's going to be a real bummer.
Romulans twirl their eyebrows.
Or their ears.
Yeah, and their ears.
Uh-huh. Some Vulcans do. That's why O's ears stick out so much. She just can't stop twirling her evil Vulcan ears.
Yep.
But yeah, I don't know. I think that this could be that the problem with Picard is that all the pieces are there and it could be even better, but it's not.
It could be, but I will say, like, you know, whatever subversion they've done so far paid off in this episode for me, because I was very much I was super happy to see Riker and Troy,
yeah,
and Picard all back together. Mm-hmm. It felt like a genuine moment.
Bill D says, hey, y'all, enjoy your coverage of the show as much, if not more, than the show itself. Well, thank you, Bill. Really like the Riker family moments out of this episode. I really want Rizzo to die and rest in peace, Hugh. Agreed. Mm-hmm. Kestra was infinitely adorable, and it reminds me that while the writing is sometimes middle school obvious from this production crew, their casting choices are usually very good. Discovery's Captain Pike choice was nice, and this Picard crew has some fine acting moments. But seriously, Kestra's casting was Stranger Things level in my book. I mean, I would agree if Eleven was playing her season one character now as a 15-year-old, because that's my problem. I think she's a little too old for be playing a Stranger Things character. But I think she was doing... I actually looked up this character's name is Lulu something, I believe. Lulu Wilson, maybe?
Yeah, she plays a lot of younger sisters. She played the younger sister in Sharp Objects.
Yes.
And, one of the flashback sisters in The Haunting of Hill House.
That's like, where I was... Yes. I was saying that like she's done a lot of good work that, yeah, I think she is an excellent actor. Mm-hmm. But it's just hard to play like a 10 or 11-year-old when you're 15.
I mean, I watched Matchstick Men over the weekend, in prep for one of our movies,
right,
and there is a 24-year-old Alison Lohman playing 15 in that, mm-hmm, show. So, mm-hmm, you can do it.
Sure.
You can do it.
Sure. And what's Ellen Page? Like, she's made a career of, right, of playing teenagers as the late 20s, early 30s something. But
it's true.
It too is its own kind of talent. There's a half-broken ship on Riker's planet named after Poker Hand, and Riker got the transponder codes from Picard. Telegraph much?
Yeah.
I think we're expecting something from that, yeah.
I think Riker will show up in that ship at some point.
Finally, a nitpick. Maddox said something to the effect, if they hit my lab with a molecular solvent, everything is gone. From a better set of writers, I'd read more into this as a clue or maybe a character gambit he was playing. But here I think it's, my secret lab was destroyed already by Romulans, alongside, let's find your secret home, android girl. And it feels off-kilter. That's a good point. What are they going to find? Because Maddox said
they don't know anything about that, right? He said that to Bejazel.
That's true.
They probably don't know that her home is gone, which is going to be fucking devastating when she gets there and there's nothing there.
Well, and it's a bummer for us as the audience because we're already like tipped off to the fact that they're chasing a wild goose.
That's fine. I mean, in my mind, I'm questioning like what is Soji going to do when she gets there and her home is destroyed? Like that's gonna set her off.
Doesn't feel like we're gonna get
reactivate
much
her.
Do you think we're getting towards the end of the season?
Mm-hmm.
how many answers do you think we're actually going to get?
To which questions? I guess what are the questions you have?
What is what is the nature of the apocalypse exactly?
Yeah, I don't think we'll get that one.
Are we going to see the nest of androids handing out or hanging out somewhere in the galaxy?
I would be surprised if we don't meet at least one more synthetic by the end of this, probably on that world where Maddox was.
Really? With the they cleaned it molecularly and there's still going to be a whole ass android hiding out?
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that destroying his lab is not the same as destroying every synth on the planet. So, like, they're probably synths who made it out.
I was just thinking, like, they make it seem like this is a very inhospitable hell world. So it's like the idea that they'd have, like, a synth.
But where are the clues? There have to be clues to the next step, right? Because, like, if the whole thing is just molecularly dissolved and there's literally nothing there.
They're going
to
get one of Picard's Romulan butlers there to reconstruct a crime scene with their magic wand.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where the clue will come from. All right, last email. Joshua wants us to check this Reddit link below. I know, Jim, you didn't like the music, but at least it's a direct connection to the story, Picard's story. I listened to this scene and then the opening credits, and it's almost one for one. Does this change your opinion? This is something I think was discovered in the last week because we got like 3 or 4 different emails, and there's a bunch of different threads on r/Star Trek that the Picard theme is essentially a reworking of Picard's flute music from Inner Light.
So I like that.
Yes.
I my nostalgia bone is really tickled there. Mm-hmm. However, it still makes a pathetic theme song. Mm-hmm. Like, those two things are mutually exclusive in my mind.
Yeah,
how good the callback is and how good the theme is, it makes you feel coming into the episode.
So, like, I think of, like, Game of Thrones, all-time great intro theme, right?
Yeah.
But they also have, like, a subtler, more melancholy, like, Stark theme that plays. Imagine if that boring-ass kind of, like, minor key shit was how the show opened.
Right.
So, like, this should be absolutely a Picard theme. Like, when Picard's pensive or whatever he's doing, you can have this thing, this reedy little flute thing playing. But, like, as the something you're going to sit and watch for 60 seconds over some CGI graphics sliding around, I could use a little bit more bombast.
Yeah, they do it the opposite here. They put the TNG, like, elements of the TNG theme into moments of the show occasionally to, like, really hit an emotional note. Mm-hmm. And then they have this weak-ass theme.
Yeah.
Did anybody think that the flute music was, like, astoundingly good? Like, this was fucking Chopin composing another symphony? Like,
also, it's
nobody thought that melody was amazing, right? Yeah. And was desperately calling out for "We need this as a theme song."
Right. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like this is also a very late discovery. You know, like, if this was as brilliant as I think Joshua here's wanting us to agree with, I feel like that would have been picked up, like, almost immediately. You know, like, oh, this is the Inner Light, blah, 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 blah. But I don't know. Maybe I'm being too hard on the show. I don't like the theme, and I don't like the music in the show. Joshua continues, everything, or one thing that the show does well at times is it rewards TNG viewers without explaining everything to the audience. One example last episode is when Troy embraces Picard and reads his thoughts about his medical condition. They could have had a cheap dialogue between Kestra and Soji explaining she's empathetic. Also, they didn't bother explaining the origins of Kestra and Thad's names, but longtime viewers would catch on to those references.
I didn't pick that up, that she was reading into his disease.
Yeah, the way
I thought she was just reading into the current desperate situation.
He's in trouble. Yeah. And he's, I did. I mean, maybe
is that
not to
on his mind at all. Is he thinking, oh, I'm a dying man?
I think so, because it's being brought up like every other episode. And he said it's like a major, like, you know, when his doctor friend said, I'm surprised in your condition, you're going out into
the
black.
To
and
he's
like, that's why I want to go out.
Yeah, the Romulan warrior nuns.
It's definitely on his mind. But I don't know, because you're right, Joshua. On the one hand, they do this. But on the other hand, like, I guess this is maybe it's more of a major plot point. They can't stop reminding us that Picard's an ex-Borg himself.
Yeah.
Which means that he actually could operate this, the Borg, the queen cell, right?
The spatial trajector.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Is he enough of an ex-Borg? Because that's the thing.
I would assume he could, yeah.
He's almost like an honorary ex-Borg. Like, the Borg just didn't have enough time to really...
Yeah, but you get all that knowledge. Like, that's just front-loaded, right? Like, boom, you know everything the collective knows.
I thought you'd have to have some kind of piece inside you.
I mean, I assume he did. He had the eyepiece. He had
But do you think he still has Borg technology inside him?
I don't know. Yeah. See, here's the thing with the XBs.
Yeah.
They do a piss poor job. We talked about this with their dick operations last week.
Yeah.
But
lavish dick penis reconstructions.
Right. But Picard is in the same boat. Picard's implants have been immaculately removed. His face completely restored.
That's
100%.
Because he opted not to restore his penis at all. Like, right. I'm never going to get it with Beverly. This Vosh thing didn't play out. So you know what? Yeah. Ken doll it. I
you know, the Picard line is gone anyway.
Put
fuck
those
it.
Deluxe 24th century band-aids on my face for an episode. I'll be fine by the time I go see my brother. Mm-hmm. Dickless. And that's fine.
But that's the thing. Yeah, he had implants. Mm-hmm. They were just removed more thoroughly.
Well, it does seem like they're building something with the Borg lore that Seven of Nine, because they, you know, Picard, when he was Frenchie freshing it up, was talking about like, oh, they had this one since she was a child. They had that. They took their time to put the Borg. Like, the more time you spend with the Borg and the younger they get you, the more they modify you.
Yeah.
So Picard's old ass just got like, you know, just essentially a Bondo and paint job that was easily scraped off, whereas someone like Seven of Nine just gets the full 9 yards, shielding and all kinds of shit.
Or maybe their tech gets better, like as the Borg get more advanced and assimilate more races, their technology improves, so all they need is a single implant.
Yeah.
Whereas with Seven of Nine, they needed to really doctor her up.
I guess also like the when they retcon the Borg as like doing the nano stuff, the nano, like it would take time for the nanobots to physically rearrange your and build new things. So like if they capture Picard within several hours of him being Borgified, maybe the nanites just haven't had the chance to reconfigure him.
Could be.
So I don't know. But thanks for the email, Josh. If you would like to send us something, if you'd like to encourage us to watch Voyager, for example. We get a couple of those a week. You can send those into Picard at baldmove.com. Can't wait to see the next episode. I guess it's going to be more, from the previews, it looks like it's going to be a little bit more 7 to 9.
No, I didn't check out the previews. I purposely avoided them.
Got to check out the previews. But we'll be back next week on Picard. Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See ya.